Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Q2 2019 Amdocs Earnings Conference Call. At this time, all participants are on a listen-only mode. Later, we conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require operator assistance, please press star then the zero key on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this call is being recorded. I would now like to introduce your host for today's conference, Matt Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you, Justin. Before we begin, I would like to point out that during this call, we will discuss certain financial information that is not prepared in accordance with GAAP. The company's management uses this financial information in its internal analysis in order to exclude the effect of acquisitions and other significant items that may have a disproportionate effect in a particular period. Accordingly, management believes that isolating the effects of such events enables management and investors to consistently analyze the critical components and results of operations of the company's business and to have a meaningful comparison to prior periods. For more information regarding our use of non-GAAP financial measures, including reconciliations of these measures, we refer you to today's earnings release, which will also be furnished with the SEC on Form 6-K. Also, this call includes information that constitutes forward-looking statements. Although we believe the expectations reflected in such forward-looking statements are based upon reasonable assumptions, we can give no assurance that our expectations will be obtained or that any deviations will not be material. Such statements involve risks and uncertainties that may cause future results to differ from those anticipated. These risks include, but are not limited to, the effects of general economic conditions and such other risks as discussed in our earnings release today and at greater length in the company's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission, including in our annual report on Form 20-F for the fiscal year ended September 30, 2018, filed on December 10, 2018, and our Form 6-K furnished for the first quarter of fiscal 2019, filed on February 19, 2019. Amdocs may elect to update these forward-looking statements at some point in the future. However, the company specifically disclaims any obligation to do so. Participating on the call with me today are Shuky Sheffer, President and Chief Executive Officer of Amdocs Management Limited, and Tamar Rapaport-Dagim, Joint Chief Financial and Operating Officer. And with that, I'll turn it over to Shuky.
Thank you, Matt, and good afternoon to everyone joining us today. We are pleased to report a strong financial performance for our second fiscal quarter. Record high revenue was above the midpoint guidance, growing 4.8% year-over-year in constant currency. Our operating profitability was solid and consistent, and we delivered diluted non-GAAP earnings per share that was in line with the high end of our expectation. As always, we were laser focused on execution in the second quarter. Our managed services business grew nicely as we ramp up several managed transformation agreements. Additionally, we continue to progress the many transformation projects that we are currently delivering for our customers. As we said last quarter, we believe our project activity is the function of our industry leadership and high win rate. Moreover, we believe the project we deliver represent important footholds in the market, which translate to long-lasting customer relationship, recurring service revenues, and a base for future growth across our strategic areas of focus. Now, let me proceed as usual with an update of our quarterly activities on a regional basis. Beginning with North America, where we are performing better than the originally expected at most of our customers as they push ahead with their strategic investments. Amdocs was recently selected to support the launch of a new MVNO wireless offering for a leading pay TV provider in the U.S. and for the second phase of the next generation customer experience platform for a large MSO in Canada. Additionally, we strengthened our Altice USA partnership with an expansion and extension of our multi-year managed services modernization agreement, and we extended our relationship with Rogers by executing an extended managed services agreement to support and enhance Rogers' BSS platforms. At T-Mobile with Sprint, we focus on demonstrating the value we can bring to the combined entity, assuming the planned merger proceeds. In the meantime, core activity level remains healthy at both customers, as demonstrated by today's news that we are in the process of deploying the Amdocs Digital One platform to modernize and accelerate Sprint's digital transformation. Additionally, we are pleased to announce a multi-year agreement with the licensing and distribution of premium on-demand content for T-Mobile recently announced T-Vision Home, which we see as a further evidence of our continued traction in the media space. Regarding AT&T, our relationship remains strong as we continue to bring value to its communication business. This includes for growth areas within AT&T Mobile, such as Cricket, Prepaid, and Mexico. Moreover, we continue to see opportunities ahead to drive significant innovation and efficiency improvement to support AT&T communication business. As to water with Warner Media, we have seen a pickup in dialogue following the recent district court decision in favor of the merger with AT&T and the subsequent changes in Warner Media's leadership. Warner Media is already a customer of Amdocs Media, which encompasses Vubiquity and Vindicia, and we believe we are well positioned to bring additional value in support of a number of media and direct-to-consumer related opportunities. As a reminder, these future opportunities are not reflected in our fiscal 2018 outlook. In the near term, however, AT&T remains focused on cost control and debt reduction, as a result of which our quarterly revenue from AT&T is tracking below our initial expectation at the beginning of the fiscal year. To summarize North America, quarterly trends remain likely to fluctuate for the foreseeable future, but we are on track to deliver modest revenue growth for the full fiscal year, with headwinds at AT&T compensated by the healthy customer activity we are seeing in the broader region. Moving to Europe, quarterly revenue was in line with the multi-year high of Q4 18 and includes the new project wins we referenced last quarter at Vion and a Tier 1 service provider in Spain. Additionally, in France, we won our first important modernization project for a major operator. We extended managed services agreement with several customers, including Vodafone Hungary, and we partnered with Capita PLC to provide digital business systems to support the rollout of transport for London's new ultra-zone emission zone regulation and standards. Overall, we see rich pipeline of opportunities across Europe's communication and media industry, including with new logos. This supports a positive growth outlook in the region for the fiscal second half, although we are closely monitoring the macroeconomic climate of the region. Turning to the rest of the world, we delivered a record quarter that includes the ramp-up of new activities in APAC countries such as the Philippines, Malaysia, and Australia, as well as Latin America. During the quarter, we strengthened our relationship with Telefonica. We were selected to support the launch of eSIM-equipped smartphone and other devices for Vivo in Brazil. Additionally, we made further progress in Africa. We were chosen as a strategic partner to digitally transform the business system and the processes of Safaricom Enterprise Business Division based in Nairobi, Kenya. Safaricom is the largest mobile network operator in East Africa region. Regarding media and rest of the world, we continue to add new logos, which include 3-year agreement with Digital TV in Bolivia, the nation's first commercial video demand service to be launched by a service provider, and a deal to support a new programming launch for Box, the largest independent programmer of Brazilian pay TV. Meanwhile, in Southeast Asia, we were selected to support the digital business subscription requirements of Eros Now, a leading over-the-top entertainment platform with vast content library in India. Overall, our work in progress and the expanding market opportunity in the rest of the world continue to support a positive long-term growth trajectory in the region, although we remind you that revenue trends may fluctuate from one quarter to the next. To summarize my regional comments, we are pleased with our second quarter performance, which we believe reflects our ability to execute and the positive demand for our innovative solutions, which were built on a cloud-native and microservices capabilities. Recognition of our innovation was recently received from Gartner, who positioned Amdocs as the leading vendor in its Magic Quadrant for Integrated Revenue and Customer Management for the 8th consecutive year. This followed last quarter news where Gartner positioned Amdocs as the clear market leader in its 2018 Magic Quadrant for Operation Support System. Meanwhile, Light Readings last week selected Amdocs as the company with the most innovative 5G strategy. We believe this award validates the new range of end-to-end 5G solution, which were core topic of the conversation in many of our meetings in Mobile World Congress in February. Let me take a moment to comment on 5G, the capex cost and the complexity of which is higher than previous generation. This is starting to create demand for a range of independent network solutions, such as the deployment and optimization services we have already been chosen to provide support for the 5G rollout to several leading North American service providers. Over in the long term, however, we believe that the monetization of 5G presents a greater opportunity for Amdocs, since 5G is enabling new services and use cases over and above services provided in traditional offering. Early examples of such cases include fixed wireless access to the home, esports streaming, and virtual reality entertainment. And we believe our sophisticated engine that includes ordering and charging have the potential to be core piece of the monetization model for our customer, which will require leverage new revenue opportunities like this. As to opportunities for Amdocs, we believe 5G can provide a tailwind for growth over the next few years. I am pleased to report that KT Corporation in South Korea recently launched one of the world's first 5G networks that is supported by the monetization solution we deployed into live production for this customer. Additionally, we are involved in a growing number of RFPs with some of the world's leading service providers, and we believe we are well placed to secure formal 5G project awards over the course of the next year, given the commercial readiness of our market-leading solutions and our ability to execute what is core competency for Amdocs. To wrap up, we are pleased with our performance for the fiscal year to date. Our market position is strong, our 12-month backlog remains at record levels, and we see solid pipeline of opportunities in front of us for the second half of the year. Moreover, we are on track to meet our full-year targets for constant currency revenue growth and normalized free cash flow, and we are raising our guidance for non-GAAP earnings per share growth in fiscal 2019 to a new range of 4.5% to 8.5%, which represent an improvement of 150 base points relative to our broader outlook. With that, let me turn the call to Tamar for remarks.
Thank you, Shuki. Second fiscal quarter revenue of $1.2 billion was above the midpoint of our guidance range and included a positive impact from foreign currency movements of approximately $2 million relative to first quarter of fiscal 2019 and approximately $4 million relative to guidance. On a year-over-year basis, our second quarter revenue grew by 2.8% as reported and 4.8% after adjusting for foreign currency headwinds of approximately 200 basis points. Our second fiscal quarter non-GAAP operating margin was 17.4%, an increase of approximately 10 basis points compared to the prior quarter and consistent with the higher end of our long-term target range of 16.5 to 17.5%. Below the operating line, non-GAAP net interest and other expense was $1.9 million in Q2. For forward-looking purposes, we continue to expect a non-GAAP net interest and other expense in the range of a few million dollars quarterly due to foreign currency fluctuations. Diluted non-GAAP EPS was $1.06 in Q2, in line with the high end of our guidance range of 1 to 1.6. Consistent with guidance, our non-GAAP effective tax rate of 16.4% was within our annual target range of 13 to 17% in Q2. Diluted GAAP EPS was 90 cents for the second fiscal quarter, above our guidance range of 75 to 83 cents. Free cash flow was $148 million in Q2. This was comprised of cash flow from operations of approximately $169 million, less $21 million in net capital expenditures and other, and includes an annual cash bonus payment for the prior fiscal year, consistent with our guidance last quarter. Normalized free cash flow was $145 million in the second fiscal quarter, which is an improvement relative to $84 million a year ago. The difference between normalized and reported free cash flow was just a few million dollars this quarter, as detailed in the reconciliation table provided in our Q2 earnings release. DSO of 86 days decreased by 5 days quarter over quarter. We remind you that DSO may fluctuate from quarter to quarter. I'm pleased to highlight that total unbilled receivables declined by $47 million as compared to the first fiscal quarter of 2019, and that our total deferred revenue, both short and long term, increased by $13 million sequentially in Q2. That resulted in an improvement of $60 million in the gap between unbilled receivables and deferred revenue as we continue to meet contract-specific milestones relating to the transformation projects we are delivering for our customers. Moving forward, you should still expect unbilled receivables and total deferred revenue to fluctuate from quarter to quarter in line with normal business activities. Moving on, our 12-month backlog was a record high at $3.39 billion, at the end of the second fiscal quarter, up $20 million sequentially from the end of prior quarter. We believe our 12-month backlog continues to serve as a good indicator of our solid book of business. During the second fiscal quarter, we repurchased $120 million of our ordinary shares. In total, we have, as of March 31st, approximately $418 million of remaining authorized capacity for share repurchases, to be executed at the company's discretion going forward with no stated expiration date. As a reminder, we retain the flexibility to vary the level of share repurchase activity from quarter to quarter, depending on factors such as the outlook for M&A, financial markets, and prevailing industry conditions. Now, turning to our outlook for the third fiscal quarter of 2018, we expect revenue to be within a range of $1.5 billion to $1.45 billion. Embedded within this Q3 revenue guidance, we anticipate a sequential negative impact from foreign currency fluctuations of approximately $2 million as compared to Q2. For the full fiscal year 2019, we are narrowing our expected total revenue growth to a range of 1.8% to 3.8% on a reported basis, compared with our previously guided annual range of 0.5% to 4.5%. This outlook includes an anticipated drag from foreign currency fluctuations of about 1.2% year over year, as compared to an anticipated drag of about 1.5% previously. On a constant currency basis, we expect revenue growth in the range of 3% to 5%, the midpoint of which is unchanged compared with our previously guided annual range of 2 to 6%. Additionally, we remind you that our second fiscal quarter included the one-year anniversary of our acquisition of Ubiquity, meaning that our expected revenue growth in the second half of the fiscal year is organic in nature. Moving on, we continue to expect our non-GAAP operating margin to remain within a range of 16.5 to 17.5 in fiscal 2019, and we expect our quarterly non-GAAP operating margin to fluctuate at the higher end of this range in fiscal 2019. We expect the third fiscal quarter diluted non-GAAP EPS to be in the range of $1.8 to $1.14. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to be at the low end of our annual target range of 13 to 17 in the third fiscal quarter. Additionally, our third fiscal quarter non-GAAP EPS guidance incorporates an expected average diluted share count of roughly 138 million shares. We excluded the impact of incremental future share buyback activity during the third fiscal quarter, as the level of activity will depend on market conditions. For the full fiscal year, we now expect to deliver diluted non-GAAP EPS growth of 4.5% to 8.5%, which is an increase of 150 basis points as compared to a previous range of 3 to 7%. Once achieved, the 6.5% midpoint of the new range would mark the eighth consecutive year in which we have delivered non-GAAP diluted EPS growth of more than 5.5%. And with our dividend yield of approximately 2%, would equate to an expected total shareholder return in the high single digits in fiscal 2019. Note that our full-year EPS outlook incorporates our expected repurchase activity over the year. We expect our non-GAAP effective tax rate to remain within the same target range of 13 to 17% for the full fiscal year 2019. We remain on track to generate normalized free cash flow for this fiscal year 2019 of approximately $600 million. This equates to an expected conversion rate of approximately 100% relative to full-year non-GAAP net income driven by normal business operations. We continue to expect reported free cash flow of close to $500 million in fiscal 2018. Consistent with our previous guidance, we plan to return the majority of our normalized free cash flow to shareholders in fiscal 2019 by way of our quarterly dividend and share repurchase program. With that, we can turn it back to the operator, and we'll be happy to take your questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question at this time, please press the star, then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to remove yourself from the queue, please press the pound key. Again, if you have a question, please press star, then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. Our first question is going to come from Shaw Eyal from Oppenheimer. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hi, good afternoon, everybody. Apologies in advance for some background noise. Shuky, thank you for the commentary on AT&T and some of the other carriers out there. Specifically on AT&T, can you provide us with a little bit of more color as to what are you seeing, on the one hand from AT&T? I know you've also mentioned, some potential activity coming from the Warner side of the equation, but, whatever additional or incremental data you can share with us, that would be greatly appreciated.
As we said before, I think that our relationship with AT&T is very strong. Obviously, AT&T, as we all know, is focusing on debt reduction and cutting costs, which also impact us. I can say that, as you know, we are operating in many areas of AT&T. Obviously, we are behind their mobile business, Uvels, DirecTV, AT&T Mexico, their network activities, Cricket, and others. So we have a very wide portfolio of activities at AT&T. We have active dialogue with the executives about different opportunities, both in the area of cost cutting and innovation that can support AT&T strategy. Regarding the second half, we don't believe that the Q3 and Q4 level will be materially different than what we've seen in Q2. The good thing is we reported that we see a very healthy activity in North America, very strong activity in North America that's helping us to offset this headwind from AT&T. We are not losing business to anyone in AT&T. Our relationship is strong as ever, and we continue to focus on delivering them value.
Understood. And maybe also if I can ask about any progress that you can report to us on the NFV front. Well, what has been happening over the course of the past quarter, specifically on that set of evolving product portfolio?
So I think last time when we talk about this, we are talking about our overall network portfolio, which NFV is part of them. NFV is relevant also for the 4G environment and definitely for the 5G environment. So we see some pickup in NFV in different places in the world. We reported the one win last quarter, and we have some active activities in different places of the world. But overall, when we look at the whole network space, which includes, as I mentioned, our 5G opportunities in different domains, in the domain of network deployment, network monetization, software-defined network, and others, this is something which, as we mentioned, we see this as a tailwind for us starting this year and next year. And so NFV is part of the broader portfolio. And as I mentioned, we see adoption. This is mid-sized projects, and we continue to focus on this.
Thank you. And our next question is going to come from Jackson Ader from J.P. Morgan. Your line is now open.
Great. Thanks for taking my questions, guys. Looks like, Tamar, your comments on free cash flow and unbilled receivables, that's excellent, and it came down, I think, by $47 million. Was any of that due to factoring in the quarter?
Actually, we've done less factoring this quarter even than the prior quarter, so then that was a headwind on cash flow, despite that you've seen the major improvement. So, no, the bottom line is this is not coming from factoring. It's coming from strong, very strong collection, very high billings that we had this quarter. We met many milestones of activities with customers. So we are very pleased with that result.
Great. Thank you. And then just a quick follow-up on AT&T, Shuky, again. Are we positive, or how confident are we, I guess, that this is the trough from AT&T activity, or could we actually be kind of having a similar conversation 3 months from now?
As I said before, we don't obviously guide on a certain customer, but for this respect, I can tell you that we don't see different, materially different activities or revenue in AT&T in different to Q2 and Q3 and Q4.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Ashwin Shirvaikar from Citi. Your line is now open.
Thank you. Hey, guys.
Hi, Ashwin.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, how are you? So let me start with, you know, there seems to be obviously a lot of client activity, which you alluded to also in your prepared remarks. I was wondering if it was possible to sort of break this down into more of the transformational type deals versus regular deals, because clearly, you know, over the last couple of years, you've signed a lot of transformational deals, and it does have a flow-through sort of impact on cash flow and so on.
We're actually seeing a very important a pickup, which we like, which is what we call managed transformation, which includes a combination of transformation projects with the activity of managed services. And in several of the customers we mentioned the pickup in activity in, actually those include both project activity as well as managed services, which is a very, very important value proposition we can bring to the customers in terms of the full accountability. We can help them deliver to the new enhanced and modernized systems while we help them improve the operations and the service levels of their existing systems. And in terms of the different activities we're looking at, some of these are transformational projects, but I don't necessarily see any of them, but any one of these deals on its own creating like a pressure on our cash flow. At the same time, as we always say, this kind of trend where we have project activity is coming with some gap between how we recognize revenue and how the billing milestones come along. But at the end of the day, I don't see there anything materially different, Ashwin, than things we've seen in the past. And overall, we see these deals as a very good indication of the market leadership position we have in the market and the win rates that we continue to see as tracking very nicely for us.
Got it. Understood. No doubt about the comment on market position. I guess a broader question, or more or less a request, is it possible for you guys to provide a cohort analysis to illustrate how, say, 2-year-old contracts versus 1-year-old contracts are doing, so we get some idea of sort of the expected cash flow pattern? So I just wanted to put that out there as a request, because I know that's not necessarily something you can do right away. But the question on cash flow specifically for now is, I did see some fluctuation in year-over-year kind of real estate build-out spend. Can you discuss some of the puts and takes? And also, does the higher EPS translate to better full-year cash flow?
So on the earnings per share, that we guided for an upward revision of the numbers. We're very pleased with that. In terms of the overall picture on the free cash flow for the year, we reiterated the $600 million normalized free cash flow target, which is a roughly 100% earnings to cash conversion. So the metrics on that side are tracking as we expected, and we're very happy to see a strong first half of the year that is obviously tracking in line with what we expect for the full year. Now, back to the investment in the facilities. Actually, in Q2 specifically, the investment was limited as we are ramping up the build-out. We expect more of it to happen in the second half of the year. As we said, overall for fiscal 19, it's not going to be more than $50 million. It's in line with the overall plan that we've had, and we are continuing to give full transparency on how much we invest every quarter in our tables in the press release of the earnings, so you can track and follow what's happening. So we don't have any major update on the facility itself, other than continue to give you quarter by quarter how much we invest in the progress there.
Thank you. Our next question is going to come from Tom Roderick from Stifel. Your line is now open.
For taking my questions. Appreciate it. Shuki, let me go back to you on just the topic of 5G. I think it's interesting you've got a South Korean carrier here that's rolling out service monetization with you. Really interesting early efforts there. And I think there's got to be a number of carriers globally that are starting to think about what 5G means for them. Can you just talk about sort of the broader level of conversations you're having, the activity related to 5G, and you know, how do you want us to think about the potential impact to your model? Can that be an accelerator as we think about 2020 and 2021? Does that, you know, broadly replace a lot of the discretionary projects that you've been doing on, say, LTE and other legacy networks, so maybe not a huge impact to the model? Would love to understand, as you think about a two, three-year time horizon relative to the conversations you're having with your customers today, how you think that can impact the top line.
So first, I do think it's going to be a revenue accelerator. And when we talk about, you know, when we say 5G, it's a bit, we believe, by the way, it's a bad name because the transformation from 3G to 4G is not like the transformation from 4G to 5G. Because, and this is, I want to explain with this, what is the angle for Amdocs. Because when you move to 5G, it's completely changed the variety of services that our customer can deliver to their consumer. It's not just, you know, speed and latency. And what it means that when you do the investment in the network, and as you know, we are also have a big activity in this domain of network deployment, so this is one uptake because everyone is deploying 5G. But I think moreover, if all our customers want to monetize 5G, they need to have a different charging system. They need to add some of their billing system, catalog, and some ordering system. So otherwise, they will not be able to monetize. So actually, 5G is not just pushing what the traditional network-related activities and deployment is actually pushing a new wave of charging and monetization activities in order for our customer to leverage the new services. So this is where we see the growth, not just from the network angle, which we see some growth there, but also for all the ability to prepare yourself to deliver the new services, which will require a new ordering system, or at least updated ordering system, sometimes catalogs, definitely the charging systems.
Outstanding. That's excellent detail. Appreciate that. And then sort of one other, you know, customer thematic topic. So we've been wrestling with the impact of AT&T and Time Warner and what that merger, the holdup of that merger, has meant for spend for a while. And you know, certainly it wasn't great for discretionary spend for you last year, and maybe coming out of the bottom of that now. Can you just give us your thoughts as to how you think about, you know, a potential delay or a breaking up of, you know, Sprint and T-Mobile, both of those being good customers of yours? Would there be a positive element to that? Would there be a negative element? How do you think about that sort of evolving? Obviously, you can't predict what happens with that merger itself, but you know, should things evolve in different directions, how do they impact you?
We're actually seeing a very different behavior around the Sprint T-Mobile merger in terms of the two stakeholders involved, in the sense that they are both very active in continuing to invest in their capabilities, in pushing and in modernizing and enhancing their offering. And we see, as we said, yeah, for example, as we clearly said with the Sprint Digital One adoption, Digital One is our latest and greatest offering to help with customer experience. We are continuing to see a very active level of business with the T-Mobile side. So it's a very different pattern to the another example you mentioned of how AT&T held up during the merger discussions. Now, having said that, we are obviously in active dialogue with both of them with different ideas how we can continue and bring value to the merged company. But many of the things we talk to them about have merit and substance even of standalone companies. So we're continuing to push forward a lot of these ideas, and I think we have a very, very good feedback on the other side in terms of the appealing offering it's moving to the table. Shuki, anything to add?
No, I think I have nothing to add. As you said, we're very healthy activities in both customers.
Great, thank you. Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question, please press star then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. Again, if you have a question, please press star then the one key on your touch-tone telephone. And our next question is going to come from Will Power from Baird. Sir, your line is now active.
Great, thanks. This is actually Charlie Ehrlich on for Will. Congrats on the nice quarter, guys. I was hoping you could talk a little bit more about the media trends in the quarter. Seems like a nice growth driver for you. Just any general comments you can make on how the media growth or pipeline or activity was in the quarter and maybe your outlook on that would be great.
Yeah, we're very pleased to see the media activity ramping up and on a global basis. If you recall, we discussed that when we entered into the media space, it was more heavily based on North America and less so in the rest of the world. And we are very happy to see the international momentum picking up in parallel, of course, to continuation in North America. So whether it's the OTT guys that want to launch to the market or the more traditional players that are coming with new pay TV services, you know, the whole trend of direct-to-consumer that is catching up around the world is playing to our benefit. And the rich offering we bring today as Amdocs Media that includes some of the assets we acquired, including some of the more organic offering that we have as Amdocs, is definitely playing out well. So we're happy both in terms of the examples we've given of awards given already as well as the pipeline ahead. But, you know, obviously this is just relatively the beginning for us. It's just been 1 year anniversary since we've established Amdocs Media. Very happy about the trend so far and very encouraged to see it moving forward.
Great. Yeah, no, it definitely seems like it. And just last question, a quick financial one. Just on ASC 606, what was the impact on revenue in the quarter relative to what you would have reported under ASC 605? Thanks.
I don't remember from the top of my head the number right now, but it wasn't that significant, and obviously we took it into the consideration in the guidance. Just to be clear, when we started the year and we guided for the revenue, already we took into consideration the 606 impact. The whole impact of the adoption of 606 to the retained earnings in the beginning of the year, which is the accumulated basis impact, was about $14 million. So you can imagine, you know, if that was the accumulated impact for all the years through October 1st, you can imagine that the overall impact is not supposed to be that significant in any given quarter. We'll definitely come out with a specific number in our 6K, so sorry for not remembering right now.
No, that's great. That makes sense. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Peter Zbeski from Barclays. Your line is now open.
Hello, this is Peter on for Tavia Rosler. Thanks for taking my question. Many of them have been answered. A couple of quick ones, though. I just had a quick follow-up on 5G. Saw the announcement with KT Corporation. Obviously, Korea is a bit ahead of the curve there. Do you have any sense of when other regions, probably most immediately the U.S. Catch up to that to that point where those similar opportunities arise for you?
So we follow carefully the announcement of our customer and the plan for deployment. I can tell you that obviously it's also connected when all the 5G phones will be available, probably later this year or next year. So everyone is getting ready, and so I believe that the activities will start to pick up, because if you want to implement a new catalog offering, a new charging system, and to get ready to the opportunities that 5G represents, and it takes some time. And if everyone is saying that they want by the end of next year to start to deploy these services, so I would assume that we start to see some pickup in this activity relatively soon.
Yeah, that's what we said. I mean, we already see the RFPs out.
Yeah.
I mean, as we speak, there are a pickup in RFP activities in different places in the world, and that's why we said we believe that in the course of the next year we'll start seeing some awards happening from our point of view. And
you are very right. Korea is probably the most advanced country in the world in deployment of 5G.
Okay, that's very helpful color. Thank you. And then just one quick housekeeping item. Given the step up in earnings guidance, any update to your capital allocation outlook in terms of share repurchases versus potential M&A?
So we continue to hold the view that our capital allocation supports both the return of cash to shareholders, and we're continuing to guide for the majority of the normalized free cash flow being returned to shareholders in the form of buyback and dividend, and still it keeps plenty of capacity from our point of view to pursue potential M&A. You know, it's hard to predict with respect to M&A exactly what will be closed, when, et cetera, because there are different moving parts that have to align. And it's not enough just as we define the, you know, what's the right target, et cetera. Obviously, there needs to be alignment on price, et cetera. So we have a couple of activities. We cannot provide too many details, but you can imagine that the growth drivers of the company that are around, you know, the network domain, the media domain, et cetera, are areas of focus for us as we look into M&A, as well as sometimes it could be tack-on deals that help us accelerate our regional presence in some place, but that will be usually more of smaller deals.
Okay. Again, I appreciate the color. Thanks for taking my questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm showing no further questions. I would now like to turn the call back to Matt Smith, Head of Investor Relations. Sir, you may begin.
Thank you very much for joining our call today and for your interest in Amdocs. We look forward to hearing from you in the coming days, and if you do have any additional questions, please feel free to contact the Investor Relations Group. Thanks a lot, and with that, we'll end the call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for participating in today's conference. This concludes today's program. You may all disconnect. Everyone have a great day.